CYOL 327.
Hey, this is John Lee Dumas, founder and host of EO Fire, and you're listening to the Create Your Own Life podcast with Jeremy Ryan Slate. Prepare to ignite.
You're listening to the Create Your Own Life podcast, the show to help you create life on your terms. 3 days a week, Jeremy Ryan Slate interviews the most successful people in business and in life to help you create the life you want to create. Welcome to Life Creation Nation.
This episode is sponsored by Slate Media Productions. Do you want to become iconic? Do you want to create more sales? Do you want to create a massive brand that everyone knows? Well, a way to do that is through having your own podcast, but not just having a podcast, but having all the PR actions that go with it to create a massive presence. And if you're a busy entrepreneur or executive, you don't want to have to do all that yourself. This is a done-for-you model where we do every single action for you and help you create that huge, massive personal brand and an audio voice that everyone can hear. Check us out over at www.slatemediaproductions.com. Hey guys, Jeremy here, and welcome to this latest episode of the Create Your Own Life podcast. Excited to be hanging out with another guy that was in that top 100 list that I first made about 2 years ago now. His name is Ryan Daniel Moran. He's the founder of Capitalism.com and also Freedom Fastlane. And today we're going to talk about scaling a business to seven figures. That's right, everybody, $1 million. And he's going to be talking about what that looks like, what you should be thinking about, and also dive into some of the things that he struggled with the most in his personal and business life. And I really appreciate his honesty in this episode. So guys, before we jump into that interview with Ryan, I want to remind you, if you have not subscribed to this show, be sure to head over to whatever directory you found this show in. It could be iTunes, it could be Stitcher, Google Play. Hit that subscribe button. Do not miss another new episode of the show. And if you're really loving us, leave us a 5-star review and tell other people about the success you are having with the Create Your Own Life podcast. Guys, without further ado, let's get into this interview with Ryan Daniel Moran of Freedom Fastlane and Capitalism.com. Hey, what's up, everybody? Jeremy here, and I am very excited for our guest today. If you guys have been following me for almost 2 years now, I feel like we've had a lot of these in quick succession, but I wrote a list of the 100 people that I most admired, and this guy was in the top 10 because I've listened to his podcast for a few years now. Our guest today is Ryan Daniel Moran. He is the host of the Freedom Fastlane podcast and the founder of Capitalism.com, which is an online accelerator for internet business owners. He has built and sold several e-commerce companies totaling more than $10 million in cash received and has helped over 100 new entrepreneurs to start seven-figure businesses. He's spoken alongside Gary Vaynerchuk, Robert Herjavec, Tom Bilyeu, and Peter Diamandis at his yearly event called the Capitalism Conference, which attracts more than 500 high-end entrepreneurs from around the world. You can find out more about Ryan and the Capitalism Conference over at www.thecapitalismconference.com. Welcome to the Create Your Own Life podcast, Ryan Daniel Moran.
Dude, it's an honor to be in your top 10, so I'm glad we made this happen. Thank you for including me in your top 10.
Absolutely. And it's funny because one of the biggest things that really resounded with me, Ryan, and the reason I kept following you is you talked about early on in your podcast how you were putting out this content and you didn't know if anybody was listening, and you just found that continuing to create it made them keep listening. So that kept me going early on. So I appreciate that, man.
Yeah. And you know what else I discovered alongside that is you can attract the right people just by changing your message. Sometimes it's not you. Sometimes it is not their product or your message. Sometimes it's just the people that you're targeting. And I have found that to be a hard lesson to learn, but a monumental shift when I finally applied it.
Absolutely. It's a huge deal on this podcast for the people that have been with me for almost 2 years now. I've seen a lot of those changes, and I feel like the model we have now really helps them the best. So Ryan, I want to kind of go to, you know, where I like to start out with everybody, because I just like to see where great entrepreneurs come from. So what's your story, man?
My story is that I am the son of a teacher for 30 some years and a stay-at-home mom until they split, and then financially I felt like I was on my own. So I have a very blue-collar upbringing where I don't have a silver spoon in my mouth. I was just very curious. And most of the entrepreneurs that I've met, if I were to boil down success to one piece of criteria, it's like curiosity. I want to find out what more there is to life. And I have this thread in me where I just find that I opt out of systems, meaning the 9-to-5 job. I don't know how you felt growing up, Jeremy, but I felt like I just kind of want to opt out of this system. When I was older, I went to school to be a pastor, and I have a very, very religious background. We could have an entire podcast all about religion and my explorations there, but I finally decided, you know, there's something about this system that I don't like. I'm going to opt out of this system too. And so the entrepreneurial bug in me was more of I want to create life on my own terms, and I want to opt out of this I want to opt out of the system that everybody else is going after. So my journey started in college from my dorm room, as I was, you know, I did not have a way to pay for college. I thought I was going to be a pastor, so was not going to earn a lot of money, but I still had this entrepreneurial drive to do things differently. Like most people who get into this game and most people who listen to podcasts have some sort of a drive that says, I'm different in some way, and I know I have something to give to the world. I know that I'm made for something more than what society says we're going to do. And so I became obsessed with entrepreneurship. And in college, I had this very weird cocktail of interests, because I was studying business and economics at the same time of the political election in 2008, the presidential election,
sure.
And the economy was crashing, and I was starting a business. So my passions became very much political, financial, and entrepreneurial. And that kind of formed who I am today, to where a few years ago, I went all in on physical product brands, because I have seen that physical product brands have the ability to be sold for millions of dollars, which I have now done multiple times. I saw that they were quick to build, that they were moving towards the internet, that old brands were crumbling. And I have seen, and we can go through all kinds of evidence of even small brands that can be built really quickly being sold for millions of dollars. And then you can invest the profits to have the type of lifestyle that you want. And that has kind of been where I have made my name, is in teaching that model, and now representing entrepreneurs and a for-profit methodology or a for-profit philosophy over at capitalism.com.
And I think that's really interesting too, because you mentioned the thing there about how you wanted to opt out of systems. And I think as entrepreneurs, it's just, we don't do very well in somebody else's system, because I think one of the t-shirts I often see you wearing is, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what it ends up being, is we don't do well in other people's systems. We think differently. We're wired differently. And I think, you know, let me ask you, like, being wired differently, how has it been kind of a blessing but also a curse at the same time for you?
Yeah, as far as a blessing goes, I think it forces us to look at the questions or the perspectives that most people aren't willing to ask. So
right.
I get a good feeling, Jeremy, that you and I could look at each other and disagree politically and talk about politics or religion and have a very constructive conversation about it and disagree and leave as friends. That's rare, but it's because we look at things, we're open to looking at things differently. We're made to look at what is the other way to see this? What's the third way to view this? And I think it's a very healthy thing for people to do. So that's where it can be a blessing, because we find answers to problems that most people aren't willing to find. And we're willing to do that work within ourselves and on our companies and on the things that we are excited about.
Sure.
But on the other side, the downside is that we tend to be very lonely. We tend to feel very isolated. We tend to have workaholic tendencies. And so we have the same triggers and the same deficiencies as everyone else. But since we're a rare breed, since there's something different about us, there's not as many people talking about that. There's not as much support for something like that. So there's actually some very interesting theses going around right now about affluent white men being the most depressed group of people, which is very interesting. And part of it is because we tend to isolate ourselves and we tend to have workaholic tendencies. And I think that's the dark side that a lot of people don't talk about. So that's the blessing and the curse.
So for yourself, how have you like taken that curse half of it and how have you, you know, kind of handled that? Because I think a lot of it seems like you've done very well with handling the workaholicness and the being kind of apart from others, but you've taken that and you know, you've handled it. So for you, what's kind of been that handling that's allowed you to kind of get around that?
Well, requesting permission to speak honestly, Jeremy.
Go for it, brother.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think our greatest strengths often come from our greatest insecurities. Because mm-hmm. if you did not get enough attention as a kid, we tend to see that as an insecurity, and now we go out and we go and get more attention. And that's where some of the greatest actors and performers come from, because they develop a muscle to cover up an insecurity. So it's like a light and a dark kind of thing. I don't know that I could answer how I manage it, except for the fact that I have built up a muscle of I achieve, and that's how I get a lot of my emotional needs met. And the positive of that is, at 30 years old, I'm more accomplished than more people dream of ever being. The dark side of that is, underneath it all, I don't know that I have handled that underlying insecurity. I don't know that it would be healthy to completely eliminate it, because there's also a driving force to that. I think probably one of the saddest people in the world is Elon Musk. This is a theory of mine based on the idea of what I think ultimately drives him is some sort of an insecurity that hasn't been met. Would it be healthy for him to completely eliminate that? I don't know. I am not a psychological expert here, yeah. But I'd be willing to bet that he is very sad and lonely a lot of the time. And I don't mean that as a criticism of Elon Musk. I respect him more than pretty much anyone else alive. But if we were to all of us trying to be Elon Musk or trying to be someone else, I'm not sure that we actually want to experience what those people experience. They had to go through a lot of difficulty in order to be wired the way that they are wired. So I am still figuring that out for myself, of what the healthy balance is. And as of right now, I would say I have my head down in a lot of work. I am not in balance. I am not happy with the amount of time that I take off. I wish I had more of that. I wish I gave myself more permission. And that's something that I'm honestly really working through at this period of my life. Even what I experienced was I sold a majority stake of a company 6 months ago for eight figures cash. Great day. 2 weeks, I read books and took it easy and was feeling super creative. By week three, I was back into workaholism. So I couldn't tell you how I managed that, except that I have to force myself to do it. And since you gave me permission to speak freely, about a month ago, I got some blood tests back that suggested, like, Ryan, you need to go to bed for like 3 months and then come back to us. My cortisol was really high. That was affecting other hormones. And it was like, oh, on paper now, I need to get a handle of this. So, yes, I'm very accomplished. I've been able to cover up. I've been able to succeed, but it has come at a cost. And now I'm in the point of, okay, how do I answer Jeremy's question in a non-depressing way of how I manage to accomplish so much while still maintaining a really positive life?
Well, I really appreciate that, though, man, because I appreciate the honesty. And I also think that's the best way you could have answered it, because I feel for a lot of us, you know, it is a muscle. It is something we strengthen. It is, you know, for myself, you know, it's why I research as hard as I do, because I've spent so much time trying to do that. So I think it is a muscle, and it makes us better at it in a lot of ways. But you also mentioned Elon Musk, and it's funny enough that I don't know if you read the article that his ex-wife wrote not too recently about how hard he works and how much she respects it, but it wasn't anything she could be married to. So I think it's like really interesting that you mentioned that. I think it is kind of a struggle for us as entrepreneurs, and we're never really going to have it figured out. So I do appreciate the honesty there.
Yeah, I think there is this myth of every area of your life can be amazing all of the time. And we tend to see our own deficiencies and beat ourselves up for our deficiencies. And everybody else is looking at our positives and seeing their deficiencies. It's this weird curse of being alive in 2017 and 18, which is that there's more opportunity than ever, and we only ever see our own deficiencies. Because, you know, I could be, you know, I could have sold my company for nine figures, but I would still see the Instagram guy with perfect abs and be upset at my 13% body fat. Yeah.
This episode is sponsored by Audible.com. Guys, Audible is one of the best places to get and listen to audiobooks. I know for myself, I am a huge audiobook listener, especially when I'm working on this podcast and all other sorts of things. There are so many different books that you can check out over there. Right now, I'm listening to James Altucher's book, Choose Yourself. I was actually listening to it while I was working today. So that is my recommendation of a book to check out right now. And in this episode, you're going to find out a big announcement that I have going on with James as well. So to get your free audiobook, to get James Altucher's Choose Yourself audiobook for free, head over to jeremyryanslate.com/book and sign up for your free Audible trial and get your free book. Oh, I think Instagram has a lot to do with it, but anyway, let's get into the idea of scaling a business, because that's really one of the things that you've managed to do very, very well and help a lot of other entrepreneurs do. So Ryan, how do we scale to seven figures, man? Like, what does that look like if we are a business owner?
So I have built my career on trying to find the fastest route to success possible. And what I mean by that is I grew up fishing with my dad. These are some of my favorite memories. And fishing got really easy if there was a stocked lake of fish. Of course, this is common knowledge. But in business, we tend to go to really empty pools and hope that the fish come to our bait. Where I made my first $100,000 on the internet was I said, okay, where are my ideal buyers and what are they already buying? And then I'm gonna just show up in front of them. And the way that I did that in college and paid for college and graduated with $100,000 in my bank account was I said, okay, I'm gonna get really good at where all of the buyers are. And at that point, it was this site called Google. It was a search engine. You would type in search queries and things would come up. And I got good at ranking for keywords on Google, where I would find out what people were shopping for, put up an affiliate site in front of those people, and I would make money as an affiliate selling those products. So there were all, I would just go in front of where people were already buying, and then I would put what they were already looking for in front of them. And that's how I made my first $100,000. Today, when I decided, in the last few years, when I decided to go all in on physical products, I did that because a mentor of mine said, Ryan, if I were you, and I was in my mid-20s at the time, the thing that I would focus on is I would sell stuff, not hopes and dreams, not information. I would sell things that people consume because that's a scalable business. And at that point, Amazon was kind of a wide open west. It was still at the cusp of becoming an established company. And it took me a few years to watch its growth to realize that that was the new hub, that was the new focus for where customers and buyers were already hanging out. So if we could drop our bait there, it would be really easy to hit the seven-figure point. Now, we have to think a little bit differently to hit eight and nine figures, but to get to seven figures, it is about figuring out what you're going to sell and putting it in front of the right people. So it is the what and the how. What am I selling and how am I selling it? If you answer those two questions, getting to seven figures at the very least becomes predictable. We won't say easy, but it gets simple and predictable. And so my methodology was for Amazon specifically to find one person that I wanted to target, we'll just say runners for example, to identify the 3 to 5 products that they're already buying. So that person is probably buying arm running bands, they're buying water bottles, they are buying iPhone holders, they are buying running shoes, joint supplements, trackers. So we just listed 6.
Sure.
And then to identify, okay, let's go, how do we go and supply those products to that group of runners? Where are they hanging out so we can advertise to them? And 3 to 5 products selling 20 to 40 sales a day, which takes about 6 months to do, is about 100 sales a day, which is $1 million business.
Mm-hmm.
So that formula applied to a lot of different, tested over many, many different brands has created hundreds of millionaires in our community from people who follow our stuff. And that's basically the simple boil down formula of figuring out what you're going to sell, finding out where your ideal buyer hangs out, and giving it to them. That's the formula.
Easy enough.
It's at least simple enough, right? I mean, we could spend a lot of time talking about little nuances, but from a high level, that's what it looks like. And when I'm teaching this stuff, I find that 80% of my job is telling people what not to do, not what to do. Because success leaves footprints, and following those footprints is fairly predictable, but we are complex as human beings. So part of my job is saying, no, don't follow this opportunity. Don't do this. You have a plan. Let's follow it. It's just like working out and losing weight. Like, we know what to do, but at the same time, we like to complicate it by saying, what about this diet or this diet or this workout or this workout? When in reality, if you take even imperfect action towards the right goal, you end up getting compounding results over time. So following a simple plan and doubling down on that simple plan and not being discouraged by slow results and just doubling down creates that exponential impact that results in a seven-figure business in 6 to 12 months, and then an eight-figure business that can be scaled and even bigger than that if we want to go that big.
Well, let me ask you this, Ryan, because you mentioned the idea of being, you know, the channel of affiliate marketing. You mentioned the channel of Amazon. I'm kind of curious to find out, you know, what your advice is on being tied to one channel, because I do feel like that's very dangerous. And you know, like, what do you tell people to do in terms of, you know, differentiating and diversifying on different channels?
Yeah, I think the difference comes down to, are you selling products or are you selling to people? And if we are just selling product, it becomes really hard to become, quote, independent of something like Amazon, because we end up playing this game of who's charging how much money, how many reviews do they have, and I think that's an inferior way to scale a business. But if we are looking at who is the person behind the purchase, then our job just becomes, how do we get more people? And Amazon is one of those sources of people. And we can tailor our branding and our messaging specific to that person. We'll go with runners again. Mm-hmm. If we're targeting runners versus we're selling iPhone holders, it becomes a much different and I think a more scalable way to look at our business. Because then we can say, okay, where else do runners hang out? Well, they're in this Facebook group, and we just need to drop our line into that Facebook group. They follow Rich Roll, and Rich Roll is a runner, and he's got a big following. So we're going to target his people. And now we start to see all these different places where our buyers might be hanging out, and that's how we can start to develop an audience, which is going to give us independence from a place like Amazon.com. I think in 2017 and 18, that needs to be the approach and the focus, specifically of physical product owners. That's building a brand rather than selling products. Brands are sellable and scalable. Products have diminishing returns. Now, we could look at an example like the Snuggie. The Snuggie was a product that sold a whole hell of a lot of product, but we don't see them advertised so much anymore, right? There's a life cycle to it. And that's one type of business, but what I'm after is building up a brand that can be scaled and sold over time, and that can only be done if you are focusing on where your people hang out rather than just focusing on what product I'm going to sell.
Well, I've got to say there, I turned mute my mic for a couple seconds because I died laughing. My wife actually bought a Snuggie for our dog, as ridiculous as it sounds. So they actually sell those. So let me ask you, Ryan, like, what do you see in terms of the brand building side? Like, what do you see most people going wrong with trying to put something together that is branded and sellable? Like, what do you see as a major mistake there?
The major mistake, I think, is that they follow what everybody else is doing rather than staking your claim and saying, this is what I stand for. This is what our brand represents. So what a lot of people will do is they'll say, well, this company is charging $15.99 for their product. I think we could sell it for $13.99. Or this person is doing it this way. They use this copy. Let's copy their copy. And what I say is, what makes a brand successful is where you are different, not where you are similar. I was consulting with one of my backroom members. My backroom is a mastermind where we do roll-ups together, and we're focused on getting people to eight figures and beyond and creating a sellable company. Mm-hmm. And I was consulting with a couple of our members, and they were talking about a product that they wanted to sell. It was one of their new products. And I told them that they needed to change up their packaging so that it was different than everybody else. And they said, well, if someone types in the product they're looking for, wouldn't we want to hit them in the face with exactly what they searched for? And I said, yes, if you want to look like everyone else and compete with everyone else. Or you can make it drastically different and be the one that everybody goes, who is this? And then the work begins of converting that eyeball into a customer. And when you can do that, you can charge higher prices. You have more of a raving following, which makes it easier for you to be profitable and easier for you to go scale that business. Mm. So the mistake is following the herd. The mistake is doing what everybody else is doing, because then you're not a brand. Then you are a trend follower. A brand carves out a specific group of people that they want to target and gives them exactly what they want. They don't worry about getting everybody. They worry about getting a percentage of the market and making that percentage of the market raving fans. And they let everybody else go to other brands. That's the mistake, and that's the solution that I see a lot of people doing.
Well, and the one thing I see there that you just mentioned is I think a lot of people, for some reason, they get stuck on individual tactics rather than something that's a long-term, you know, strategy. You know, social media is kind of the best example of this. I feel like, oh, everybody's live streaming on this app now, or everybody's, you know, doing stories on Instagram. So they run to a tactic and they don't have a bigger vision of, you know, like you were talking about, in a brand play of where they want to go as well.
Yeah, and I think that is opportunity seeking versus business building. Mm-hmm. And both are fine. I think a lot of people get their start in opportunity seeking, but they ultimately get wealthy and rich by building something. And building something means having a long-term view and saying, I'm committed to going in this direction. An example of this would be, you know, I have a 25-year commitment to building out capitalism.com and to being an impactful media empire. The strategy or the tactic that we follow to do that will probably change in time. You know, there is more and more concentration of traffic on Facebook right now versus people consuming off Facebook content, like actually clicking and going to a blog. Okay, that's going to be the tactic for probably the next 1 to 3 years. And then it's going to change. Mm-hmm. But if you have a commitment to something very long term, you are actually building something versus just pursuing different opportunities.
Very cool. Very cool. So before we get into what you have going on with the Capitalism Conference, I want to talk a little bit about you as the entrepreneur. And Ryan, if you had to look at it, what would you say is your greatest skill set? And how do you feel you developed that skill?
Wow. Oh, man. Bragging on myself. That's difficult. You know, I have always said that I make the best decisions when I think about very, very long-term impact. So I make terrible decisions when I think about what is going to benefit me or my company for the next 3 weeks. But I make really good decisions when I think about what I want to be over the next 5 years. I just tend to make better decisions when I think about that. So I would say my greatest skill is that I am willing to suck longer than anybody else. I am willing to have it hurt, and I am willing to put in the time and the work longer than anyone else. You mentioned the Capitalism Conference. Doing conferences is a lot of frickin' work for no money. And this is year 3 that we're doing this. And every October, November, I think, do we really want to be working this hard for this little result? And the fact of the matter is, now that we're in year 3 going into year 4, we have name recognition and people are like, wow, you guys came out of nowhere. And I'm like, no, like it was a lot of freaking work getting here. And I am willing to suck for longer than anybody else, which is why most people give up in year 1 or year 2. So my superpower in that case is looking at the really long-term view and knowing that for 3 years I am willing to not enjoy it, or I am willing to at least punt the first few years in order to get it to the level that I want to be able to evaluate the result. When I started the Freedom Fastlane podcast, I said, I'm going to give this a year before I evaluate if this is a success or not. If no one listens for the first 6 months, I'm not allowed to evaluate the result until month 12. And then I can decide if I want to do this or not. Now, the contrary argument to this is once you've achieved a certain level of success in some area, it can be a more testing grounds. For example, Tim Ferriss had success publishing books. He was had a lot of name recognition. And when he went to start a podcast, he was like, I can't commit to doing another thing. So I'm going to test this and I'll do 6 episodes. And if I like doing the 6 episodes, I'll keep doing it. And it ended up being the most successful thing he's ever done. Mm-hmm. So that was something he decided to continue. But when you're just starting or you're deciding which direction you're going to take your life and career, I think you have to be willing to punt the first year to 3 years before you're allowed to evaluate the result. And if you do that, then you will outlast all of the other people who are opportunity seeking, and everybody will say, wow, you came out of nowhere, knowing that you had to work really hard to get there.
Well, I think that's a huge point, especially in the podcasting space, because there's a lot of people that don't make it past 20 episodes. It's kind of like a cutoff point for a lot of people. And I know even for myself, being 2 years in now, I'm getting some of the greatest opportunities now that I could have never expected, because you have staying power, you've built something recognizable, and you stand out from other people. So I think it's just really important to mention that, Ryan.
Yes, that is 100% the case, because there's almost – I just did this video that I released on capitalism.com. It's sitting right near a million views right now. It's a couple of weeks old, and I make the argument that the secret to success is that when you start something, you get this surge of energy. And now when you start something, that could be a new project, a new business, a new relationship. It could be a new fitness plan. You're like, yes, I've decided. Now you get this surge of energy. And that surge of energy is so that you can do one thing, and that is give more than you expect to receive for a period of time. It's like a test. Mm-hmm. It's like in fitness, you have to burn more than you consume in order to lose weight. In business, you have to give more to your customers than you expect to receive. Like, you have to provide more value via your product than you're expecting to charge for it. That's how capitalism works. You have to give more than you expect to receive for a period of time. It's like this test of, are you going to be a good steward with what will be entrusted unto you after you get the success? And so you get this surge of energy, and with that energy, you have to be willing to give more than you expect to receive in order to get the result. Because if you aren't willing to do that, then you don't deserve the fruits of your labor on the other side of success. So most people will say, I made this decision, I'm gonna go in this direction so that I can get as much as possible. But you don't get to get until you have provided more value on the other side of that. Now, other people don't see all the blood, sweat, and tears and work that you put into providing that value. All your customer knows is that they're giving you $30 and they're getting this thing. All your partner sees is what they receive. They don't see all the thoughts that you think about him or her. They don't see all the things you do or don't do in order to keep them around. Other people don't see all the work and saying no to cake in order for you to get the body that you want. So they don't see all the things. They just see the result. But it's your job to maintain this focus of, I'm willing to give more than I receive for a period of time, and then you are entrusted with the benefits of that success.
Very cool. Well, you mentioned earlier what you've been doing here the whole last quarter, and you've been doing this for 3 years in a row. So tell us about your mission with the Capitalism Conference and what we can expect this year, Ryan.
Yeah, so I run an event called the Capitalism Conference that is basically a global summit for entrepreneurial empire builders. To me, an empire builder is someone who is focused on three things. Think of it as like a pyramid. At the bottom of the pyramid, you have your business. And if you want to be an empire builder, the vision of your business needs to be like, you've got a minimum, a seven-figure goal. Your goal is to hit seven figures, maybe scale to eight. And if you're a really big thinker, then you want to build a $100 million empire. But this is not for people who are wanting to make an extra $3,000 a month on the internet. If you're an empire builder, you think at least about scaling what I have into a seven-figure business. And they know that in order to do that, they need to get good at the second part of the pyramid, which is marketing and sales. Because no business ever succeeded and scaled without knowing what was working right now in terms of marketing and sales. And then the top part of the pyramid, if you want to have an empire, is where you invest in people, where you invest for cash flow so that you can have the lifestyle that you want and deserve, what emerging technologies like cryptocurrency and other things that are disrupting the marketplace you need to be thinking about and investing in. And all together, these three areas, your business, your marketing and sales, and where you're investing, create your own empire. So I've built an eight-figure empire, but I've never built a nine-figure empire. So the focus of this year is I've brought in individuals who have built eight, nine, and 10-figure empires, and they're coming back to give the playbook to building a billion-dollar business, or investing for unlimited passive cash flow, or the playbook for what's working right now in marketing and sales. And we take the best in the world and we put them on on stage for 3 days so that other entrepreneurial empire builders can take those strategies and implement them into their businesses and their investment strategies and get results really quickly. And this year, it's December 7th, 8th, and 9th in Austin, Texas. We've just announced Russell Brunson, Damon John, the founder of The Honest Company, Kimball Musk's closest advisor and brother. Or did I say Kimball Musk? That's his name. Kimball Musk is Elon Musk's brother and closest advisor. He's going to be joining us, as well as a bunch of experts in marketing, sales, and investing. So you can take all that you're learning and invest for passive cash flow. And we create a bunch of experiences so that you actually connect with those individuals as well. So that's what we're doing at the Capitalism Conference this December.
And I think you have Garrett Gunderson at that conference too, correct?
Yep, Garrett Gunderson will be there alongside Tom Wheelwright. The two of them will be sharing how entrepreneurs can keep more of the money that they make, because entrepreneurs are the value creators and we should be keeping as much money in our pockets as possible. They're going to be talking about how to read and interpret the tax code so that you can write off more things, how you can structure your business so that you save more money on taxes, where you should be investing in order to give yourself the most upside. So yes, Garrett will be there alongside a bunch of other people who specifically are tailored to helping entrepreneurial empire builders build their empires.
Absolutely. Well, Ryan, before I let you go here, the thing that's really important to me with what we're doing here is the idea of legacy. And if you could far in the future look back on everything that you've done and sum that up with a quote on your tombstone to what legacy means to you, what does that look like?
He made me laugh.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I've been asked, what do I want on my tombstone? And I've just said, you know, he brightened my day. He made my day. He made me laugh. He made me think bigger. At the end of the day, I think one of the greatest problems facing our world is that we don't take personal responsibility for our happiness, and we don't take responsibility for the results that we want to get in our life. So if somebody said he made me laugh and he made me think bigger about my life, he made me realize that there was no limit and that I have freedom from the illusion of limits, then I have done a good thing. I don't know if all that will fit on a tombstone. It would have to be a sales letter on the tombstone, I guess.
And then buy here or something. My favorite response to that one was when I asked Noah Kagan that, he goes, "No quotes, man, just a jukebox and tequila and everybody will be happy."
That's true. Well said, Noah.
Very cool. Well, Ryan, I really appreciate you hanging out with me today. I'm sure everyone's going to be looking forward to the Capitalism Conference coming up. Where can people find you online? Where can they check you out, man?
Yeah, my podcast is called Freedom Fastlane. You can find that on iTunes. That's where I share the strategies and the formulas for building seven-figure businesses and dialing in your marketing and sales, scaling to eight figures. And then once a year, we get together at the Capitalism Conference, and you can find that at thecapitalismconference.com.
Awesome. Well, Ryan Moran, thank you so much for being on the Create Your Own Life podcast today.
Hey, man. Thanks so much for having me, and keep doing what you're doing. I love what you're up to in the world.
Hey guys, thanks for hanging out with me and Ryan today. You could check him out over at thecapitalismconference.com. And I really recommend you check out that conference. You're going to be seeing my wife and I out at that conference in December in Austin. So it's going to be awesome to hang out with you guys out there. And you can also get the show notes of this episode over at jeremyryanslate.com/327. Also, guys, if you have not yet subscribed to the show, head over to whatever directory you found this show in. And hit the subscribe button. Don't miss us. Don't miss another new episode. And if you're really loving it, leave us a 5-star review and tell other people about the success you've been having on the Create Your Own Life podcast. It's a simple thing you can do that actually helps other people to find us in those directories you subscribe to us in. So guys, rock on and catch us on Monday.
Now go out there and create your own life. Motivation may be great, but action is better. Get it done, my friends.